Okay, so I'm going to try and make up for some of your time there. I'll just jump right in. So the media is a powerful tool that works to shape society. It does so by formulating and conveying specific ideals, norms, and values to audiences who adopt these as their own. So as a result, in Canada, the public holds the media responsible to meet certain democratic expectations, with the principle of equality being a top priority. One aspect is the equality of the sexes, be it those creating media or those who are the subjects of it. So broadcast journalism, unlike other media such as print, is based on the power of showing. Audiences are attracted to specific programming due to usage of graphics, imagery, and the people who present it all. The success of broadcast news depends on this, which is why it must be observed with a critical eye. Do women represent an equal portion of newsmakers, or are they members of a skewed minority whose purpose it is to attract targeted audiences and increase ratings? After completing an internship at CTV Montreal, I was able to combine firsthand observation and research to lead me to the argument that although the quantity of women in broadcast journalism is equal to or sometimes even greater than that of men, the status of women in the newsroom, as well as the double standards they must face to succeed in the industry, have not been improved to the same degree. At the end of the day, though changes have been made and are being made, without the component of quality, equality is just not possible. So, yeah. I began my research by looking at the different stages of feminism in Canada, and it didn't really come as a surprise to find out that during the second wave of feminism, which is the late 60s, early 70s, there was the most progress with the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, the CRTC, and the CBC, which is a public broadcasting corporation. And so basically what went on were a lot of commissions, the public was really involved, parallel language was put into place, so if we discussed women by their age or their physical appearance, men being covered in the same story would also have to be referred to by the same way. And interestingly enough, by 2000, the Canadian Women's Press Club, which was a women's networking club that began in the early 1900s, actually became unincorporated due to a decreasing member base. Why was this? It was because there wasn't a need for it, indicating that the club's purpose was, 100 years later, fulfilled. So women have become more numerous, and critical mass can lead to shifts in power relations. For female critical mass to garner power, however, we must remove barriers that prevent women from climbing the professional ladder. In Canada, news is no longer designed for, about, and by men, as structural inequalities have been diminishing since the 1970s. But women are still not represented equally in all job levels. Improvements have not lifted them into positions of higher power, which is really the only way to directly affect the overall news product. So where do we begin to make changes? I would argue in the classroom. Women made up more than half of the journalism students in North America in the 1970s and over 60% by the 1980s. Yet these numbers do not translate to the staff of the newsroom. Looking around my communications courses, I can tell you that number has continued to increase, but still, it's skewed. So occupational segregation could explain this trend. It's a process whereby women move into fields of work traditionally dominated by men, only to discover that their increased presence has led to decreases in their status and their salaries. But another reason for the drop in females is the high turnover of female journalists at news stations. Women leave TV news anywhere up to their mid-career mark, and men tend to stay a lot longer, which I will argue later is because of age and physical attractiveness. So at this time, I would quickly like to address the assumption that some people have that women have a different way of creating, interpreting, and presenting news, even though they sat next to men in the same courses. This statement relies on viewing women as a homogenous group, which they most certainly are not, and it's arguments like these that use stereotypes to create further stereotypes that must be approached with caution. So, the quantity of women present in Canadian broadcast newsrooms suggests that women have reached equality with their male co-workers. This, of course, is not what determines the status of women and the role they play in the office. The three major English-speaking broadcast news stations in Canada, CTV, CBC, and Global, have seen increases in the number of female journalists on air to the present point of equity with men. sentences qualitatively or quantitatively justifies gender equality, as would the old saying, strength in numbers, suggesting that a larger concentration of women means they would have a greater ability to influence the work environment. But an equal distribution does not apply to prestige positions where men outnumber women. And these are the ones that can't be seen on TV. They're the executive producers who sit in offices while the reporters report live. So even if raw numbers are signifiers of change, the TV newsroom culture must be studied. Are the bigwigs on top willing to take into consideration the perspectives of entry-level reporters? So the newsroom of a broadcast television station is most definitely an exciting place to work and is not meant for those who are creatures of habit. Reporters walk in every morning not knowing what stories are waiting, what people they're going to meet, and what snags they will hit along the way. Despite the popular conception, women are not strictly confined to soft news pertaining to health, arts, and lifestyle. Although from my own experience, it was women who covered weather and men who covered sports. I also shadowed females covering NHL stories and helped males create pieces on gardening. So broadcast news is a visual medium, as I have said, attracting audiences by the enticement that showing equals knowing. The attractiveness of women journalists is emphasized through wardrobe, hairstyle, and makeup, all of which are more significant to ratings than their opinions, their skills, and their actions. Male journalists do not escape these criteria. I know some who can't grow beards, even though they would like to, but the standard is not set as high. The traditional news anchor in Western society, if you think about it, I'm going to assume that a male who is white and older comes to mind. This will change as audiences become more familiar with women in these positions, but there is still that instantaneous image in our heads. So here comes the paradox. Women are forced to embellish their femininity and physical appeal, yet they are also encouraged to adopt masculine traits that are seen as more trustworthy and objective. So sitting at my desk one day, a male reporter came up to me and told me that I would have to cut my hair to be taken seriously by future employers in the industry. Startled, I asked why, and he replied that he didn't know, but it had happened in the office before, and he thought that it would just be professional. I immediately, after my classes, thought that it was a way to enforce conformity to masculinity and didn't think it was fair that the woman who was covering the weather could have long blonde hair while all the anchors and reporters had to wear bobs. There is yet another double standard that has arguably seen the least progress towards equality between sexes and is one of the most difficult to ameliorate due to traditional norms deeply embedded within Canadian society, and that's the collision of public and private spheres for women journalists. Women are unfairly judged by their age and domestic responsibilities due to the need for 24/7 availability. Women are less likely to be in long-term relationships and have children than their male co-workers, and this was actually proved by my research. And I've been told by women working on Parliament Hill and at national levels that you can literally kiss a family life goodbye if that is what you were hoping to go into. With this being said, today it is normal for children to have two working parents, and both men and women journalists face high costs when it comes to spending longer days at work. So a final double standard that needs to be addressed is that of salaries, which are actually fairly equal between men and women, but they are based on seniority in terms of years in the job and not education, which, once again, works against women. So finally, it wouldn't be fair to talk about this if we didn't address journalists of the other sex. I have two Canadian anchors behind me, and the one in the middle is my personal favorite, Anderson Cooper. He's CNN in the States, and I love him. So, basically, the relationship men have with the news and their female colleagues must be addressed to understand the consequences of their influence. And the gender mediation thesis is plays a big role in research on this topic. And it argues that news is subject to a masculine culture due to the remediation of society's gender role norms and stereotypes. So basically this means that the structure of news media is transferred to society within the news product, apparently carrying masculine undertones. At the moment, there is great disagreement over whether this still rings true in Canada. Despite claims that males control the entire news procedure, there are shared codes of standardization in the profession that prevail over gender-specific styles of news production and delivery, if there are any, such as dedication to the truth and acting as an independent watchdog over decision-makers. Men and women receive identical educations and enter a workplace where regulations seek to end discrimination and encourage integration. Still, the quantitative presence of females does not directly coincide with their qualitative influence, which is in the hands of men who, at the moment, remain the authors of our reality. In conclusion, at the beginning of all this, it was a personal hope that the findings of my research would indicate that there is no longer much need to discuss the issue of how sex affects status in the field of broadcast journalism. For a viewer, it would appear that the numbers of male and female journalists are at par, at least in Canadian society. Yet, after digging more deeply and observing a newsroom firsthand, it appears as though women are still struggling with aspects of quality, not quantity. It is for this reason that continued research in the status of women in news and specific types of news is extremely crucial for the benefit of journalists, transparency, truth, and the common good. I say that because my research was done solely on broadcast mainstream news. There are a plethora of independent outlets that could also be observed, and that's what we need to do next. It is also imperative that men are not excluded from this research, as though they may have been deemed as having superior status over women, many also face daily hardships that have not been taken seriously. And that's it.